Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here we're starting with week 12, and we're going to be trying the Optimus Boundary Microphone, which is something we want to use this for the discussions that we're going to be doing on later on today. And what we'll do is we'll group up and we'll be able to put the microphone in the center. This is week 12 of using databases in education, and right now we're in the middle of the Henning Project. And the things that we're going to do today is I want to discuss a couple things. One happens to be the field trip on December 1st, where we're going to be going down to the College Community School District in Cedar Rapids. And Craig Barnum down there has invited us to come on down. I talked to him about it. I also told him we'd take him out to dinner afterwards. So, you know, I mean, it's the least we could do. He said he would do an evening show for us. So if we wanted to get down there at 5 o'clock, do you think you'd be able to make it down to Cedar Rapids? Or what time could you make it down here, Rob?
4:15.
Okay.
That's on a Thursday.
That's
4:15
in Cedar Falls.
4:15
in Cedar Falls. Okay.
Cedar Rapids.
About 5:30. Yeah. Okay. Well, then I'll tell them about 5:30. Okay. And then also I was just speaking with Kathy out in Quad Cities. And she says she gets off at 3:30, so she'd be able to make it there, and I haven't talked to Sandra yet. So Sandra and Kathy, if you're listening to this, I will be contacting you, but we're talking about taking a field trip to College Community School District in Cedar Rapids on December 1st. Is that going to fit everybody? Otherwise, you would have been in this class anyway. It's just a matter of starting class a little bit early. And at that time, Craig will take us through what they do at their school and the data management that they do. I mean, he could do it online and that sort of thing, but I think we'd get a lot more if he took you around and saw you. It'd be really nice if we could do this in during the day so we could see students, but then again, we'd probably see a lot of intrusions and things like that. So that's what we're going to be doing then. Yaomi's going to start out today by showing off. He didn't have an opportunity to show off his work last week. And so he's going to start off by showing us his work that he did on his expanded personal database. I'll have those corrected for you next week. And that'll be all set up, and everything will be caught up by next week. Knock on wood. Okay. And so are you ready to come up and show us what you have, Yaomi?
Sure.
Why don't you do that? Okay, let me take my flash drive out.
There we go.
Stick it on in there, and we'll get things started. Now, I did notice that there wasn't a great deal of activity on the Henning Project discussion board, such as I was the only one that put anything up there. But I know that that's just part of the process, right? It's part of the process. You all had an opportunity to sit down and try to figure out how you wanted to put that database together. And I'll get this out of your way. And then, let's see. No, give it a second to be recognized. It'll be coming up. Is that yours?
Yes.
Okay. And we'll turn off the lights up here in the front so that everyone can appreciate your work. Okay, you all set? Microphone's right over there. If you want to move it closer to you, or if you want to stand over here and bring that down, you can do that.
Okay, everybody. I'm sorry because I couldn't concentrate in my work last week because of Eid al-Fitri. I celebrated my fasting celebration, so today I would like to...
Are you trying to say your excuse for not getting your work done was you were eating too much?
No.
Okay.
The same as the previous personal database, I work with Language Laboratory. I make three tables here. The first one is course, the second one is language lab, and the third one is teacher. But the main table here is should be teacher. So I just put about 25 records and 11 fill of this table. The second table is about course, and there are about 7 fields, because I think I just need about these fields. I don't need the rest of these. And the last one is language lab, and I just created about 5 fields and consists of 3 records, because I just need about these. The second one is curious. Okay, I would like to go back. The question that I would like to ask in this table is about how many teachers are teaching in the course. And what class is taught by a teacher, in what level, or in what kind of facility, and including about the capacity of the room. And the last one, how much should be paid the student if the students come to the elementary one or intermediate or advanced level, how much money should be paid? So those questions should be answered in the following queries. Queries one, I just created about 5 tables: first name, last name, course, course name, and level. I just I forget about the relationship, right? I have to go back, because this is the relationship between 3 tables: teacher's table, course table, and language laboratory. So the first table is about teacher's technical skill, should be related to the subject and the course.
So what is the field subject in the teacher's table as well?
Yes, because the technical skill of the teacher is dealing with the subject.
So you simply renamed it in that table, but that was a connection you made.
Yes.
It has the same content.
The same content, but different.
Fairly different name.
Yes.
Okay.
And also, in the part of course, the content is the same, but the name is are different.
Right.
About the firms, and no queries. So as I said, that I just created like 5 tables to answer that question. Who is teaching in Arabic and in Lanjutan level?
What level is that?
The level is Lanjutan.
Yeah, but in English?
In English, it's the same as intermediate. So these are the teachers who are teaching in Arabic course, especially in the level of Lanjutan. So I sort this table based on the, I sort as ascending, and then I make criteria only the Arabic class and the level of Lanjutan that I want to show. The second query is about English course. So the first one is Arabic course and the second one is English course. Yeah, basically Arabic and English are the same, but I make special criteria for the intermediate level. And I sort based on the room number. The last one is query 3 about the tuition. So I named this query is tuition query. So to answer about how much should be paid by the students for the level of Dasar 1, Dasar 2, or Basic 1, Basic 2, or the same as Elementary 1 or Elementary 2, Intermediate, Advanced level, both in Arabic and English. So I put here count of the cost and sum of the cost. So there are 10 students who paid in Dasar 1 level. So the amount of the tuition is 2,000. So it means that one student should pay like 200.
So is that a calculated field?
Yes. The calculate field. There is count field and there is sum field. And then the next one is firm. I can see I divided the firm into parts. The first one is course and the second one is teacher. And the course one, so this is the building that I asked my dean to send to send this building, the picture of this building. So this is the building that I worked with at the time before I came here. This is language center. So this is English. So in the third floor is English. The second floor is Arabic and the first floor is office. So in this side is laboratory, both for English and for Arabic. In this form, I saw this firm based on the each course. I saw based on the number of the amount of the students. So in Arabic level, for example, there are 15 students in English level, subject of writing, English course, subject of writing, and intermediate level. And the cost is 300. The facility is audiovisual, and the capacity of the room is 25 students. So the second, Arabic, English, so all level of Arabic and English I put in this firm. The second level, the second firm is at about teacher. So if you want to find who teaches grammar in the elementary 2 or elementary 1 or intermediate, so it can be clearly seen. And what time the course is over, what day, and in what number of room, because there are 3 rooms in this lab. The first one is audio, and the second one audiovisual, and the third one is multimedia. The last one is report. I also make 3 reports. I name Arabic report, English report, and tuition report. Here, I just count about the number of the teacher right here. I don't know, you see. I got confused how to count the number of the teacher, but here, based on the number, I classified based on the first name. If there are 2 first name.
So like Khaled.
Right here, for example. Idham, actually only 1 person, but he is teaching 2 classes in Arabic, in Lanjutan level. So if I count how many teachers right here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, only 7, 8, 9, yeah, 9, but 3 of them are teaching in 2 classes. The same of this report, English report, also I made like that. So how many teachers are there in, how many teachers are teaching English? So I can count right here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But all of the teachers are teaching 2 classes. Abdul Mois Hasbullah are teaching 2 classes in English in the level of intermediate. The last one is about tuition. I just put the average amount right here to make me easy to divide. So one student in the level of elementary 1 should pay like 200, because the average of the average amount of the money is 2,000. 2,000 divided by 10 means 100, 200.
But you have 2,000.
Yes. I just put the average right here. Actually, I need to pay the total, but I don't know how to put it. It's better for me to put the whole amount.
Okay.
But
it doesn't really mean the average.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's why I come to the average to indicate the 1 students. Yeah, actually the same amount. Sorry
about that. There's a computation there that's missing.
Yes.
Okay.
So, any suggestion for this table, queries, from, and reports?
On your report, could you go back to your reports, please? Now, when you clicked on English, click on English if you would. Why does that input screen come up?
I don't know. I need to enter the parameter value.
Now, you have Arabic and English. Are there any other languages?
No.
Just Arabic?
Just
language?
Arabic and English.
Could you type Arabic in this one right here?
Probably it works. It works.
And are those Arabic teachers?
No, English.
They're English teachers?
Yes. I don't know why it happens.
Okay. Well, that's good. Any other comments or questions? Or
I think that comes up because of the relationship. I think you got something going on in that relationship.
Right.
The relationship?
Yeah. Well, good job.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Yami.
Thank you.
Okay, now, one of the things that it says on our, here we go, on our syllabus, it was talking about us discussing data, chapter 6, and I think it might have gotten lost last week because we're getting into the Henning Project and that sort of thing. How many people read chapter 6? Okay. Rob read it. I wish I had a gold star.
No, I have study hall and I have to read during that time.
Okay, you have to read, and so what you do?
Yeah, that's one of the policies. You're supposed to read during study hall.
So you're supposed to read to be a good impression on the students, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, well, chapter 6. This is what I'd like to do, and that is that you have a printout of the presentation I'm going to do tonight. I'm just going to review some of the things because it will correlate with some of the Henning stuff that we're going to be doing. I'm just amazed at how well all this stuff is fitting together. Actually, it was all part of the plan. I want you to all know that all this was complete, meticulously planned out. But it's very interesting since this is the first time I've taught this class and everything is just falling right into place, which I think is going pretty well. But one of the things I wanted to talk about in the first part of chapter 6, and even if you haven't read it, you might want to open it up, or you don't have to, because I'm covering this stuff out of the book. And it's talking about the different kinds of tests and things like that the students would be taking and they'd be analyzing. And then what I'd like to do is I'd like to talk about chapter 6 again next week. And so I'd like you to review it, because there's additional work and information in there about how to actually analyze it. And I think it fits very nicely into the work that we're doing on the Henning Project. So here's the key. Question is that when our question about why do we assess and things like that, that's all a matter of trying to figure out if we've succeeded. The whole idea of being a teacher and the whole idea of having students in schools is to get results. You know, we want to take a look at improving student learning, and we want to see if we're doing it right. You know, a lot of teachers, and in fact a lot of people, say, I don't want to have to evaluate what I'm doing. What if I do it wrong? The problem is that if you don't have some sort of evaluation, you can't pat yourself on the back when you're doing it right. Now that's basic, that's completely from a teacher's standpoint. From a student standpoint, it's the same thing. From a student standpoint, they need to have feedback on how well they're doing. They need to know as to how well things are moving along. And there's a lot of different types of tests that we use and instruments. There's the teacher-created tests that people make all the time and are used in classes. And some of those are really good indicators and some may not be. And some may be different than the type of test that we usually think of. But it is developed in such a way that it does indeed indicate whether the students know it or not. I mean, it may not be a paper and pencil test. It may be a to-do test, or it may be, express yourself test. I mean, these sorts of things, they're merely means of an assessment. But then there's also the state-mandated standardized test. Now, these are the ones that most educators cross their fingers like this and say, no, no, get away. But it is, with No Child Left Behind, it is indeed a reality. And it's something that is being dealt with. It's a big part of our education right now. And it's there are pluses and minuses to it. We'll talk about that in a bit. There are things like anecdotal records. Anybody here ever use anecdotal records for anything? What's an anecdotal record?
Anyone know? Rob, you know what an anecdotal record is?
Yeah, honestly, no.
Anybody? Andy?
Just jotting analytical notes.
Anecdotal just means...
Yeah, it's nothing.
Boy, today Johnny did a really good job today. I'm glad that he did so well.
It's like a teacher journal.
Yeah, it's a teacher journal, yeah, right. Okay. Teacher journal.
That's just a technical term,
anecdotal record, you know, in a teacher journal or whatever you want. But it is one way in which you have some sort of documentation.
You see it a lot with reading and guided reading, small group.
Guided reading, small groups. I mean, the thing is that when I was talking about that other kind of testing, you know, it's observation, it's assessment. And remember, assessment is gathering the information. Evaluation is trying to figure out what it means. And so you may be gathering the information in anecdotal records. Now, why do we measure learning? I mean, these are all things you could come up with. Basically, we're trying to see if the students whether they know particular skills or knowledge, whether they're achieving a specific level of proficiency or competence or mastery of the information. What kind of effect are our instructional strategies having on their ability to do this? Are there ways that we can improve the strategies? Do we try something out and then see how they're doing? You know, it's an ongoing reiterative process. How do we classify the students in instructional groups? I mean, that's something where we're trying to figure out where they are so we can best address their needs. And once they've gone through the process, have they finished it? Do they know everything they're supposed to know? Are they ready to graduate? And then finally, if the school processes are achieving the intended result. Now, since the intended result in education, or one of the intended results, is graduation, that's the key. I mean, if the students are able to pass that test, then what they're doing may very well be meeting the results. Now, of course, that depends on what the test is, and it's all indicated as to how this is set up and whether the test itself is a valid indicator of whether the school processes are achieving their intended results. These are just a few. Can you think of any other reasons that we measure learning? You think we cover the gamut there?
It kind of falls on how to classify. The math always measures how it measures to improve on the appropriate classmate to high school. That's kind of the same thing.
So whether they need to be moved to the appropriate class, okay. Any other reasons that we test and measure learning?
Because we have to.
Aha, there's one, because we're supposed to. That's that level one of data collection in classes, isn't it? We're supposed to measure that sort of thing, and then we're supposed to be able to do something with it. Well, that's something. Of course, the reason we're supposed to is we're supposed to be able to use that to address all of these needs. Are there any other reasons? I can't think of any. I'm just seeing if you guys have any. Okay, so there's a lot of things that we do. Now, when it comes around to measuring student learning, big one is standardized tests. A standardized test does not mean that it has to be the ITBS. A standardized test is something where it's uniform in content and the way that it's administered and the way that it's scored. Now, you've got science tests that are standardized, right, Rob? To a certain degree, you said that it's the same test in different classes?
Yeah.
Well, that you have multiple science... I thought you said at one time that you had multiple science teachers, and different parts in this semester, they have to give the same test.
It was a previous school.
So okay.
What you did was 50% of your tests had to come from your own creation of it, what you thought the kids could be assessed on. And then the other part was questions that you got from a word question bank that was standardized. So...
Oh, okay.
And so by creating a test, I had 50% of what I could go and compare it to other...
Okay, but the test that you gave was not always the same. I mean, if you took it from the question bank, you may be giving different questions than other teachers.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was more standardized.
More standardized than your other 50% that you could put together yourself, right? Do you think that it was standardized enough to say that to be able to compare what's happening in the different classrooms as to who's doing a good job of teaching and who's not, or which students are learning and which ones aren't?
Probably not.
Why?
Those 50% of questions, I might be really easy. They might be really tough. But we also compared Iowa test-based skills and the CSAP test.
Right.
So it was just another part of the big picture.
Okay. Has anyone else here ever seen standardized tests that are not the, you know, the Iowa test of basic skills or the ITES or the, anyone, have you ever taken class tests that weren't those?
Well, I mean, I've seen it before. Waterloo has a specific like reading test that everyone that they've generated that every, you know, second grade classroom has to take so that they can compare results based upon
how well the second graders have passed this test. But it's one that was generated in the district.
Same, yeah, it's the same one for every classroom. I mean,
okay. Now, there's different things, different terminology I want to look at. Well, I'm going to talk about norm referenced, criterion referenced, and diagnostic tests. And, yes?
Can you go back to uniform content?
Okay.
What about if we have different textbooks that we use or different sources that we're going to use, for example? Should we have a uniform content?
Well, it depends. Once again, why are you giving them a test? You're asking, should, if you're using different textbooks, do you need to have tests that have the same uniform, that are uniform in content? Why do you have a test? I'm at, that's a question. That's not... Okay, I'm asking the question, why do you have the test?
To know about the ability of the students.
Okay, and then if we're looking at something that's standardized, that means that it's similar in different situations. It needs to have the same test needs to be given. Now the question is, it can use different books and different methods to teach so that test can be, the same test can be given. Do you think you can?
Yep. Probably I can. Because I remember about national standard that we use in my country.
In Indonesia?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
We don't have a state standard and district standard.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the book that the people in the western part of Indonesia use mm-hmm. for teaching, and the people in eastern part of Indonesia are different. But when they attend the national standardized test,
uh-huh.
the content of the test are the same.
So they use different books, but the content is the same. Okay.
Yeah. That's the problem.
So, is that okay?
Yeah. In reality, based on the data, most of the students who never use that book, they don't understand about how to answer the questions.
Okay. Now, this brings up a very interesting question, and that is that when we're doing education, are we, and we're selecting what people need to learn, are we basing it upon a book, or are we basing it upon a set of outcomes that we expect from our students? What do we think? I'm opening this up. Callie, you haven't spoken yet. Yeah, you knew I was going to get you. Okay. So, what do you think?
I think it should be outcomes.
It should be based on outcomes?
Well, and your outcomes can come from, I don't know. Yeah.
Why?
Well, I don't know.
Because what? You could be right. Or you could be wrong. Either way, it's okay. We're voicing our ideas.
I don't know. I think having an outcome gives me a direction of where I want to go and what I want to be teaching students, so I can know what I want to get out of the book to teach students. Because if they have a desired outcome that I expect them to achieve and understand something, it helps me as a teacher to...
Okay, so you think that you need to have outcomes, and then you select the materials to, based upon that to get the outcomes you want.
If you're talking about standardized tests, I think it should be, I mean, if you're doing a standardized test like in a district, it should be kind of a uniform, because then there's no room for variability in the, it'd be a more valid test.
Okay.
Results.
Okay. Anyone else want to add to that or build upon what she said?
I never use a book.
You don't use a book?
Yeah.
Okay. Why not?
Because a book limits what you do. Sometimes limits the way you teach it, what type of student you affect by.
So how do you know what to teach? I mean, if you don't have a book there that tells you what to do day by day, what are you going to do?
You sit down and write your curriculum.
Oh, so you write your own curriculum based upon what?
Your standards. Yeah. So you sit down your standards and you think to yourself, well, how am I going to be able to teach this so that most of my students learn the information, and how many different ways can I teach it? So I have a lab section, a hands-on section. I have an activity, a project for them to do. I have lecture. I have all kinds of different ways of teaching.
So you've got outcomes, and then you identify the materials you want to use to achieve those outcomes on an individualized basis.
Yeah, depending on me or depending on what my student needs.
Okay. And what's been your experience, Andy?
As far as the role of textbooks or?
The role of textbooks, outcomes, teaching, all the things we've been talking about for the last 5 minutes.
Let's see if we can pull something together.
I know you can.
So, it's interesting, the comment from Robert.
Yami's going to save you. Okay? Okay.
Sorry.
No.
So, what is it, Yami?
What is the reason so that you don't want to use the textbook, for example?
I mean, it's not that I don't want to use the textbook. Mine just really stinks. And most of the time, I mean, textbooks are usually, 4 or 5 years old by the time they're published, and then usually the average is 4 or 5 years old in your classroom. So I'm now teaching with information that was, 10 years old. And so, I mean, I've only been teaching for 8 years, so now my textbook's not even outdated me.
Sounds to me like you were listening to that Apple presentation
exactly.
The other day.
And so, I mean, when I sit down, I look at the textbook, and the textbook can help me, and then I use it. But if it's not going to help me, if I don't think it's being productive, I don't use it. I take our textbook out, and I show it to the kids the first day, and then I take it and put it back in the closet and say that'll be the only time you'll see the textbook because it's no good. And plus, I mean, if you want to kill a kid faster, you know, his brain, shut it off as fast as you can, have them start doing a bunch of questions out of a textbook as soon as they walk in the class. They're done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Okay. So, is that different than in your country?
Yeah. Because it is a problem. Most of the textbooks that they make, not because of the expectation of the students. I mean that when we implement the curriculum based on the textbook, sometimes it's difficult for the students to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Because probably when they made the textbook, they didn't come to the students and analyze what kind of needs of the students so that they can make the books based on the needs of the students.
Right. And so that was a problem.
That's the problem.
And so we've got a basis where we've got a system where you're putting the textbooks in front, or I mean, your system puts the textbooks in front of the needs of the student. Or they have textbooks that they are well designed and they've been designed to meet needs, but then you've got a test that doesn't necessarily align with the book. So the key is that we talk about what are the outcomes. And then what you do is you use the textbooks. Or you use the magazines or newspapers or resources on the web or whatever resources you have. I tell you, if you could teach students how to, their multiplication tables by having them stand in the corner and whistle Dixie, that's okay. And that's what educational freedom, that's academic freedom. You all heard of the term academic freedom? Academic freedom is, it's not saying I can teach anything I want. Academic freedom is we have outcomes that are necessary, that when students go through a class, there are certain things that are expected. Now, of course, this depends on whether it's, you know, an experimental class where somebody's trying something new, or when students finish math 1, these are the outcomes that they're expecting. And how that's achieved, you know, that's your academic freedom. And if you come up with other ways in which you want to teach it, more power to you. But that's what they're trying to do. Because the problem is that when you have articulated curriculum throughout the school, and you have math 1 and math 2, and I'm just using these terms because they're sequential and very simple. But if you have math 1 and math 2 and math 3, when I get students in math 2, I want to know that they've been able to do at least the things that are in math 1. Obviously, they're not going to be. But I need to know where they've been so I can know where I can take them. And that's why you have the outcomes. That's articulation. Does anybody else want to discuss anything on that or make any points?
I think there'd be very, very few teachers in the world if they were told to teach this way, this only way. I mean, that's the enjoyable part of teaching us.
But what about having the outcomes? I mean, is it okay for them to have outcomes and standards?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even if not, you have teachers with loose cannon down the hallway who's just teaching them whatever they want to teach.
And know? They're out there.
And they're still out there, and they're still trying to tie you to standards. But I mean, I taught out of state in Colorado. Their curriculum was very strict. It was you taught this way. Here's a textbook, and it just kind of burned me out.
Wasn't a lot of fun.
No, and then the other problem is then if you are the teacher who teaches differently, and you have a group of teachers who are all the textbook teachers. Then you're the bad guy because you're the fun guy. All the kids, you know, though they like your class, but I must be doing something wrong in mine. And then they, you know,
then you're the one that they pound upon.
Well, yeah, and that's the reason I like teaching with the people I teach with now, because we're a good mix of all kinds, you know.
Good. Okay, so let's take a look at standardized tests, because one of the things you're going to be analyzing. So there's lots of different things to consider when you're looking at assessing student outcomes. Now, when we're taking a look at data-driven decision making, what we do is one of the things that comes in there is student achievement, isn't it? And that's one of those four measures that we talk about, as student achievement, and how that fits with school processes and demographics, and what's the other one? Huh? Perceptions. Very good. Thank you. Okay. And so that's the whole idea. So. The student learning, the standardized tests basically come in norm reference, criterion reference, and diagnostic. Now, this is not by any means a statistics class or anything like that. Norm reference does not mean it was spoken about on Cheers. That's a bad joke. But anyway, okay. But everybody got it, though. You know Cheers? You know the movie or the TV show Cheers?
No.
Okay, TV show Cheers takes place in Boston, or is supposed to take place in Boston, and it's in a bar, and the bar is called Cheers, and there's this guy at the end, and his name is Norm. So Norm reference, get it? Okay, that's the joke.
I thought
okay.
You were going to yell, so I started plugging my ears.
Why would I yell?
Well, like in the TV show, when they walks in.
Oh, they all go, hey, Norm!
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Okay, well.
I was preparing myself.
I actually went to that bar when I was back in Boston, and it turns out that the only part of the bar that's really part of the bar is the stairs and the TV shot. The only part that's really the bar is the street and down the stairs. All the rest of it's in Hollywood. So anyway, so here we talk about a curve. You've all heard of grading to the curve, and the idea is that whenever you do something, you've got the people that are really good at it, and you've got the people that are really bad at it, and then you've got the majority of the people in the middle. And we talk about having, you know, this is the average, and you talk about standard deviations on either side, and that we end up with one standard deviation, two standard deviations, three standard deviations, and when they come up with tests with a norm reference, what they'll do is they'll give this test to a number of people and see how they'll create a curve like this, and that's how they would work out their testing. Now, when you have teachers, have you ever had a teacher that graded on the curve?
Yeah.
And what did that mean?
That meant that it was guaranteed the same number of Fs with the same number of As.
Right. That's what it means when you grade on a curve. When you grade on a curve, it isn't something where you can say that 90% and above is an A. What it's saying is that I'm going to have four, out of 30 students, I'm going to have four A's, I'm going to have four F's, I'm going to have eight B's, I'm going to have eight D's, and all the rest are going to be C's. And that's how they break it down. Now, I don't know about you, but could you imagine taking a test and having everybody in the class getting a 90% or above, and the people who got the 90% got F's? I'd have a real problem with that. But that's what they're talking about when they talk about the norm curve. But that, you know, that's a little bit different. What they're doing here is they're saying, let's give this test to everybody, and then let's see how it works. Now, in some cases, they'll find that this number is either skewed to the left or skewed to the right. It's never perfect. But it'll be skewed one way or the other. It turns out that what they can do is they can use this type of system to analyze the test as well as each of the questions, to find out how well they did. And you may find that some questions are too easy, some questions are too hard, poorly worded. This whole thing is what we talk about when we talk about norm referenced. And it's standardized, and like I said, the whole idea is that they go out, they take a representative group of people, and this becomes the norming group. You know, and what they do is they do this test, and then after they've given them this test, they then say, okay, this is the way it's going to break out. These are the scores, and this is how we test things out. This is like a focus group. And then they take it out, and they give it to other people, and they base it upon this. And your SAT, your ACT, all of these have been normed because they've given them to test. And then over the years, they continually redo that to see how the tests are coming out. And I guess they're
not
saying...
Not with the SAT. There was a standard norming that was static, right, throughout. The ACT moves yearly.
No, but I'm not saying that on a yearly basis, but the SAT is one that was normed, and then periodically they renorm it.
Yeah, I think like it's
5-7 years or something like that. They renorm
it. It's not fluid like the ACT.
Now, I didn't know that the ACT was fluid. What does that mean?
Yeah, it moves throughout. So the norming curve is set by throughout each year. The results of the previous test set the norm. Because it's different from the SAT, which there's a static norm for a certain period of time. With the ACT, I'm pretty sure they try and move it based upon previous.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. We'll have to. The ACT was actually started here in Iowa City. It's an Iowan intervention.
And they revamp the ACT, what, every 3 or 4 years?
Yeah. There's turnover in the ACT and not as much with the SAT.
Right, okay. So that's something that happens, is that we this is a norm thing. Now, these are the way that they do the scales. Now, actually, I passed this out to you, right? Okay. And you'll notice that some of these letters are on here, some of these acronyms, some of these TLAs. You know what a TLA is? A three-letter acronym. Ha-ha! See, you use it. Anyway, so we start out with the National Percentile Scales. Okay, I just want to make sure you guys are paying attention. You know, and if I'm not hearing any groaning, then I know that you're not paying attention. You gotta groan just once in a while, right? Just oh God, I pay money to come to this class. Imagine that. Okay, we talk about percentiles. Percentiles are set up in such a way where the idea is that if you had 100 people, and you had scores on the tests, the middle person would be getting a 50. Okay? And the top person would be getting 99, and the bottom person would be getting a 1. Now, how is this calculated? There's actually a calculation system, and I must admit, I don't know what the algorithm is or anything like that. I called a couple of my friends who are statisticians, and they said, well, it's been so long since I did it by hand, I really couldn't explain it to you, but the process is, the idea is that when you have 99 at the top, 1 at the bottom, 50th percentile is the mean. And so when we take and then what happens is that the next, you know, the 51st, 52nd percentile, 53rd, that has nothing to do with percentage, and that's a big problem that people have. They get mixed up with percentage and percentile. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It's an ordered interval. And you may find that if somebody gives you a test and it's a 200-point test and the average was actually an 87, and you had just as many people who got below 87 as you had above 87, 50, the 50th percentile would be 87. And then the way it breaks down up, going up and coming down, is going to be unequal. Because you notice that isn't half, right? And so what you're going to end up with is when you talk about these numbers, and sometimes people make big mistakes. These are not numbers you can add and subtract and do all and multiply and divide. You can't do that to these because all we're talking about is intervals.
Now, can you average NPRs together then?
No, you really can't average them either. Because they're not quantities.
Yeah, they're derived scores.
But what if you're comparing NPRs of multiple students? So let's say
go ahead.
You know what I'm saying? Like in our project, if we want to analyze the NPR of students, and we want to find the average NPR of the group, mm-hmm. we'd have to use the exact same NPR score from one category.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't be able to.
That's a good point. And
how do they find the core, and how do they find the composite then?
Well, see that's because they have the actual data, the actual test result on items.
I see.
The percentile doesn't
represent to make that individual items. Are
it's the actual individual items that create that.
Because yeah, the scores that they're going to be using that with. Okay. And then what they do is they take the score and they use that to identify the percentile.
Yeah. Because what I see is like the national percentage ranking, the average for my school.
Right.
And that would be okay.
What they're going to do is they're going to take the scores, the raw scores, like what Andy was pointing out. They're going to take the raw scores, they're going to do the calculations on the raw scores, and then they're going to take a look and see how that transfers over into the percentiles.
Okay.
Now,
so if I took all the NPR scores in math and I added those all together, found an average of those, that might be different than the actual the overall average or that they would give.
Yeah. If you did it with the scores, you could do it. I wouldn't do the NPRs. If you took all the scores and put them together, and then you figured out what the average was, and then you went over and looked at the NPR.
That's funny, because that's how we're presented things in history. We're saying, well, the average NPR of our students is...
Well, you might actually get that, though. ITBS actually does break it down based upon your score. They'll set a norming curve for your score, because they have access to the raw data.
You know, no, but I'm not talking about somebody that's information from ITBS. It's information presented by someone else.
But what I'm saying is if they took the NPRs and averaged them, that'd be a problem. But if they take the score and average it and then puts it into the and then does the translation into NPR,
then would be okay.
Then it's okay.
Right, I got you.
It's important, and these are tricky, and I'm not a statistician. I've had a few classes in statistics and even passed one or two of them. But I had one class that wasn't so good, actually. Okay, but the thing is that you need to pay attention to what type of numbers these are. So that's the NPR, and if you take a look on the Henning Project's paper, you'll see NPR, National Percentile Rating.
So if you had to explain NPR to a parent, what would you say?
What best way to say is you say, Johnny just, or I'll use someone else, Juanita. Well, I mean, I'm always using Johnny, you know, and that's that white Anglo-Saxon, you know. I got to come up with something, you know. Mohammed actually was using got a 56th percentile. He's in the 56th percentile, and the way that I would explain that to a parent, if I had 100 kids in a class, 55 of them would be below Mohammed, and 45 would be above Mohammed. Muhammad would be right here. So that means, and 50th percentile would be average. So Muhammad is a little bit above average. Now you can't say he's 6 percentile points. I mean, you. It's better just to say something like he's a little bit above average. You know, and when you have Iban, who got a 57th percentile, you know, that just means that they're pretty close. But I don't think that you want to do statistical analysis on those numbers.
So is it, in theory, is there that one student who's out there, is it 100%?
Well, 99 is about as high as they go. And I think they just wanted to keep it at two digits. but yeah, I mean, there are people who took the ACT or anybody here get a...
I know
I have two friends that actually got a perfect on one on the ACT and one on the SAT.
Okay, so they got a perfect score.
Perfect score. It's unbelievable. I mean, two kids I knew that did that.
Well, you know, my son Jeff went to school with a kid who went out and he took the SAT, and when he left, he found a mistake on the SAT. And so what he did was he wrote it up and he sent it in to them, and they said, "You're right." So, yeah, I mean, and I'm sitting there going, "Oh my gosh." Okay, now, yes.
I'm thinking, how do they give the score? I mean, that do they just classify the average, the lower, and the upper, below the average and the up, the average?
You mean, how do they do the NP
or
NP?
Or if they convert into the A, the score A, B, or C?
This has nothing to do with A, B, or C. Actually, 50 percentile is average. And so technically, the 50th percentile would be a C, if we consider C being an average. But this has nothing to do with grades. All it has to do with is relational position in the grading based upon the norm. Okay?
So
it's not percentage, it's percentile.
If this data happened into the classroom, for example, how can they give the grade?
There's no grade. This is the one where we're trying to figure out, like right here, when you take the ITBS, you'll notice that it's right here. And what this is doing is it's saying, let's take a look at the first student. Student number one is in the 56th percentile in vocabulary and the 19th percentile in content area reading. Now, who wants to decode that? What does that mean? Or actually, Yami, tell me what that means. You see the NPR, and it says 56?
56, yes.
Okay, so what does that mean?
It means that there are 56 students who... the score of vocabulary, I think.
Yeah, it's 56 percentile.
There are 32 students.
No. I don't want you to go anywhere except that 56. If we're calling that a percentile, what does that mean?
It is the average score of the students.
50? No, what if we're 50, then that person would be average. That means half of the people would be above the person and half would be below the person. And I just realized why they only goes up to 99. Because that's an odd number of numbers, which means 50 actually is in the middle.
Oh.
Hey, pretty good, huh? Not bad. A little bit
good.
Of deductive reasoning here. Okay. Or maybe it was inductive. I don't know. Anyway, so what happens is that when somebody's at 56, does that mean they're above or below the average?
Above.
Okay. A little bit or a lot?
A little bit.
Right. Just a little bit. Because only 6 points, or 6 percentiles... above the middle. Now, what about this person's reading comprehension? What's the number for the reading comprehension? Or content area reading, I'm sorry. Second column. There's 56, the next one over. Remember, this is one student. What did they get in content area reading?
Below the average.
Yeah, but what's the number?
19.
19. Now, is that way below or a little bit below or what?
It's very far from the average.
Right, it's way down there, isn't it? There's 18 people below and 80 people above. So that person's hurting in that, and that person needs some real serious work on that. And so that's how you can take a look at the NPRs throughout. Any questions on that?
I still have a question about the grade, because
there's no grade.
Yes, that's I'm going to ask you about, because we are talking about how do we measure success. Mm-hmm. So looking at this grade, what grade should we say these students are successful?
Okay, well, interesting question. Now, if you remember Dr. Henning is a magician. But Dr. Henning talked about 40th percentile and 80th percentile. And anyone who got below the 40th percentile was hurt, was in problems. Anybody above 80th percentile was doing quite well. And so remember, this is the kind of testing that would be a standardized test that the state or the country gives, and you know, it's much bigger. It's not the kind of day-to-day grades you're going to get. So that's why they don't do the A or B.
The next question should be asked is, what about the highest score is only 60? No student who can get the 99, for example.
Well, it doesn't have to do with numbers. What we're saying is that the way the percentile is set up, and there's a way of calculating it.
So to measure the success of the students, how can we?
Because we're talking about, it's not the score, it's their ranking. So if you were to take, and I actually started doing this box trying to show that, but then I found out I was a little wrong in the way I was doing it, so I threw it out. But if you were to take all of your scores and rank them from top to bottom, the middle one is going to be your median. You know what a median is? What's that?
The middle.
So right. But it's not an average.
Yes.
What it means is that you take the top one and the bottom one and the next one and next one and next one until you get to the very middle. Now, you can do that with a 60-point quiz, right? You can do that with a 400-point quiz. But what it's going to do is the people that are at the very top, which could be getting a 60 on that test, would be in the 99th percentile. So it's something that is translated over into this. Do you see how that works?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the next one is the normal curve equivalent scores. And the NCE, I think we've got an NCE on here, don't we? Nope, I'm sorry. I thought we had one on there. Okay, now what this does is this takes the percentiles and puts them into this gives you numbers you can play with. What it does, I'm not going to go into how it does it, but it uses these standard deviations. It's like a 24.7 standard deviation system that it uses, and it makes it so these become equal intervals. And so it has a mean of 50, and it actually is set up so that you can use this. These would be the numbers you would calculate. I mean, if you want to go around and you want to take a look at percentiles, that you translate them into the normal curve equivalent scores. And then these would be the numbers you could play with, not these. It doesn't sound like your statistician does that, but it's a matter of knowing what.
It's just not consistent. Sometimes we see two different numbers.
Uh-huh.
We see the average NPR, and then when you sit down and you start looking at these ITBS scores, you realize that those two numbers don't jive together.
Okay.
Like when I average.
Well, now you've got all these questioning things in your mind, and you can go back and you can start asking them questions about what it means. And hopefully you won't be the one that everybody's going to pound on, just like over there in Colorado, right?
Yeah.
Now, when they talk about 50, they're saying that that's the expected growth over a year. In other words, that's kind of improvement they hope to see. Now, we talk about grade level equivalent scores. Now, these are the ones that teachers use a lot. And what this means, and you'll see them on here, it's your NGE and your IGE. So we'll take a look at national grade equivalency. And what it is, it has to do with grade and month. Now there's 10 months, I don't know what they're going to do if they get year-round schooling. But at the present time, there are 10 months in a school year. And so it just so happens that we have a decimal system that accommodates that very nicely. And so when you see 5.5, that means it's fifth grade plus 5 months. So where the student is right now would be September, October, November, December, January. So this is where the student should be at in January of their fifth grade year. And this is something that's been very much normed. You see what they did is they went out and they gave this test to all these different students, and they identified which levels they're supposed to be at, and using that is how they figured out what the kind of scores they should be getting. But this is a very important number. And the key is that it's a snapshot. And you don't want to necessarily average them, and I must admit, I don't know why. I think it's because it's more of a numerical, it's a counting number, rather than a quantity, you know, an amount. Like if you had six glasses of water, and you could take all of that, you could average it, and you could find out how much the average content in a glass of water was. But when you're talking here, I think it's a little less scientific.
Well, and if you try to predict where this student would be so-and-so down the road, that's the assumption that the kid's going to learn the same rate that they've learned all the way through there.
Right. And sometimes you try to take everything and boil it down to some numbers, and it doesn't necessarily work.
Because what that number shows is that the person, when they were norming the test, the fifth grader at the fifth month, uh-huh, scored the same as you did.
Exactly.
So it's not even like if you were as smart as a fifth grader in fifth month, you know, it's like a separation from that conclusion. It's okay, like if you look at this ITAD one, 13 year, 6 month, that means the person who took that test, who scored the same as you, was, you know, in 13th. So it's all relative,
right,
to.
So, you know, and that's a good point. That is that what we're doing is just like when we talked about the percentile, it's the score on the test that they're going to be looking at. And since you're not dealing with a score here, you're dealing with an interpretation. That's why you wouldn't want to add and subtract those. And then we talk about standard scores. And these are scores that are basically, you want to be able to take numbers like this, and you want to compare them. What they'll do is they'll take different tests, and they'll try to show some kind of standardization between them. Yeah, it's kind of an iffy process, but what they want to do is they want to show that there's some kind of connection between them. The problem is that it doesn't always work, and it's a matter of whether you're going to believe those statistics. And then we talk about norm references scales, and they're based on the indicators of ability, and what they're trying to do is estimate the average scores of students. And these are ones where what they're trying to do, I'm sorry, they're all norm. These are based on indicators of ability. This is actually a system where what they're trying to do is they're trying to predict how well the students are going to do in the future based upon these tests. And they're going to be looking at grade level equivalents and norm curve equivalents and standard scores and things like that. And what they're going to do is they're actually trying to predict into the future. There was a heading here that I think I forgot. It had to do with prediction tests. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to see how well they're going to do in the future based upon what they see. And, you know, when you take, like, the SAT or the ACT or the GRE, they've got all these things that are dealing with sequences and analogies and memory and verbal reasoning and all that. Those are the things that they're using to try to predict how well this person is going to do in school. That's why you take those. Not to find out how smart you are, but also to find out how well they think that you're going to be doing in school based upon those.
Would an IQ test be something like that?
Yeah. There's been very little correlation between how well you do in school and your IQ. In fact, often a lot of people who have high IQ do very poorly in school because they don't want to mess with the garbage. But it could be something like that as well.
I saw a statistic showing that the SAT and its predictability somewhere around 17%. They try and like range like what they consider successful, so they base it on 4, 3, 2 point on a 4 point scale,
right,
in college based upon your freshman year. And they try
freshman year you shouldn't count.
But that's what the SAT is designed to do, is show success in the freshman year. Not overall for 4 years. It's designed for that freshman year.
No.
Yeah, that's what it's designed
for.
Well,
maybe it's designed
for crap your freshman
year. No, but I mean,
that's
everybody, I mean.
But that's what it's.
All right, okay. Now, let's have a show of hands. Who was on academic probation in their freshman year? I want everybody to know this is 3 out of 5 people.
Yes.
Callie, you didn't, huh? You probably had straight A's, right?
No.
No, but okay.
You're so bad.
I was impressed.
Yeah, okay. Well,
Yeah, but they're, well, in their freshman, yeah, they should at least go to sophomore on that. But you're saying 17%, huh?
Yeah, was okay. The predictability rate on the SAT.
Okay.
I would like to ask about the national
percentile.
Oh,
percentile. I use that because that's an abbreviation that you'll see sometimes.
The second one is about the sequences, analogies, memory, verbal listening.
Right.
Like in GRE test.
Right.
Some university ask GRE test, the score of GRE until last 5 years. Do you think that during 5 years, if we take GRE test, the score is gonna be changed or?
Oh, so in other words, you could take the GRE 5 years ago and they'll still take those numbers?
No, the score that we took like five years ago.
Right.
Is still valid for entering university right now, for example. So the question is, do they think that during the 5 years we never change in?
So you could get dumber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I don't know, what do you all think? You think 5 years? What?
I've gotten dumber.
You've gotten dumber.
I've regretted.
Okay. What do you think? Do you think that 5 years is okay? I don't know. I'd say two. That'd be my guess. What do you think?
Sure.
Sure, okay. She's right up there, man. Okay. So here we're talking about criterion reference. Remember, before we were talking about standards reference. Now we're talking about criteria. Now we're talking about, now those were standard, now the term standards gets used a lot. When we talk about standards being, the standard being the norm referencing. And those were norm reference. These are ones where it's based upon setting up standards. Now, we all use standards all the time. We've got the Renaissance standards. We've got the ISTE standards. We've got just lots of standards. You've got reading standards, science standards, all those sorts of things. And what this is trying to do is identify whether or not you have achieved what's supposed to be achieved at that level. I mean, this doesn't have, it isn't normed or anything like that. You're just supposed to have a certain level of proficiency. And in this, like maybe it has to do with analyzing or finding the main idea in a paragraph written at the third grade level. And the question is, and that, let's say that's a standard or a part of a standard criteria. And then what it is they go through, and based upon your success in doing that, this is how they identify whether it's been done. And that's when you get this continuum in a curriculum, where you're going step, 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 and then it's a matter of how well you've achieved. When I taught fifth grade, this was 15 years ago. No, this was 25 years ago. Jeez, that was a long time ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
10 years.
Yeah. No. I just can't. I didn't pass that standard, that criteria of being able to track in my head.
15, 16, 17 years, 50, 25.
Well, I got to remember that because my next anniversary is the 25th anniversary. See, I got to remember that. So I can't blow that one. Okay. So anyway, what we did is we gave the students tests, and then we had a criteria. And it was all based upon whether they knew the stuff, and then we gave them additional work. I mean, this has been going on forever. But here's where you identify whether it's far below all the way up to advanced. And this may be standardized, it may be not. It may be normed, it may be not. I would bet that usually what you'll see is you'll see this test being standardized within a district. You might see it standardized on a state level, but you'll see it standardized within a district because districts are the ones that are worried about the standards. Teachers typically aren't, unless the district tells them to be worried about those standards. Yes?
Some states have criterion reference tests for their No Child Left Behind requirements.
Right.
Which makes more sense because, you know, it's not constantly shifting. It shows a level of proficiency to a standard.
Right. And it's a matter of can you meet these or not? And then we talk about diagnostic. You all know about diagnostic tests. I mean, these are the same as going to the doctor or something like that. But what they've done is they've identified what the needs are.
or I mean, these are used to identify learning needs, and they are standardized, and they are normed, and what's happened is that they've identified that if you go through this test, and there's certain responses, it isn't a matter of right or wrong, or certain responses you get on these, then they're going to say, geez, this person has a problem, and this is what it is. Now, when we're talking about, I was thinking more of the psychological tests. If you talk about diagnostic tests where you're trying to find out how, you know, what level does a student read at, or what kind of reading problems do they have, it could be, it is a right or wrong answer. It's not just how they answer.
That's what an IQ test is.
An IQ test?
Diagnostic test. Because it gives you a...
Yeah, I guess it would, yeah.
This would be more like if you have a kid come into your district who doesn't have records.
Right.
Then you want to sit down and you want to find out where they're at. So we have basically a test for math, for reading, for science.
Mm-hmm.
Especially then if you have a kid who isn't classified special ed, then you give them these kind of things so that you can determine where his weaknesses and strengths are.
And the things that you're looking at, I mean, you may look at percentiles and stuff like that, but what you're really looking at is where are the problems. Like you said, the strengths and the weaknesses. So those are the kinds of scores you look at there. So, that's kind of an overview of testing and numbers and things like that. What we'll do is we'll take a 10-minute break, and then we will come back and we will work on figuring out what to do with the Henning Project.
There we go.
I would download that. I'm going to put that on a slideshow.
Okay, so now we're back, and we're going to be doing a little bit of discussion to find out about how we're going to approach the Henning Project.
That was the right introduction there. Okay, so let's start off by loading mine up here quickly.
I'm going to hit the lights over there.
I got to be 30 years old and now I sit like this. I don't know what happened.
Henning.
Went from this to this. And I don't know where that happened.
What?
Sitting like this when you're younger to now I'm past 30. And
just what happens.
That'll do it.
Okay, so I set up two tables. And I got to thinking. Maybe two tables was the way to go. Because I first started off with this big table. It's kind of clunky.
It's big.
And it's big. So I labeled it accordingly, and I called it big. So what I did was, in the interest of not having to retype in information, I started off with student info, and actually did my own, with this simple student ID. This is 867-5309. I got problems. First and last name, and I put a little pull-down menu for male, female, ethnicity, just throwing around just some ideas of what we had talked about, Caucasian, African American, Latino, Asian, Pacific Islander, and then a simple checkbox for free and reduced. So that's the student info. And then for the ITBS scores, what I did was, I thought about the things that will change either from session to session or year to year. And the things that are going to change in order so that we can pull up based upon teachers, based upon grades, based upon years, this stuff shouldn't necessarily go with the student information, but with where the test result goes. So this student ID corresponds to, obviously, that student table that we saw. But then, pull down menu for grades, so I think I'm in third grade. My teacher, Mr. or Mrs. Smith, what year it was taken, and then the session, because schools have both a fall and a spring session in which they give ITBS. And then for each one of these, you know, just a simple numerical type-in for this, so that you could have 8675309 like 10 times on there, and you could pull up each one of my individual performances from year to year.
Hey, click on your plus. How do you have them linked?
Based upon the student table. So you can see what's going on with me, whether I'm free and reduced, so on and so forth.
Now, is that free and reduced going to be changeable? Is that a one-time entry thing or is it a multiple entry thing? I mean, will that information be stored? I mean, I'm just thinking a kid could be free reduced 1 year and then not be free reduced next year.
Oh.
Not to pick it apart, but.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that would have to be year specific.
So that's what I looked at. What's staying the same and what's changing? So, like, I think we had grade and teacher and year and all that stuff underneath, like student info.
You're really smart, too.
Yeah, I dominate, basically.
Sorry.
On those scores. But that's what I came up with. Any suggestions, anything that you saw with yours that is different than this?
No, it's almost exactly the same. I didn't go as far with pull down menus. But
yep. Yeah.
I fiddled with the form too.
Are you filled with the form?
Yeah.
With the input, what that's gonna look like?
Yeah.
Nice.
But I don't know, I just still think that the year thing is gonna be kind of confusing. I mean every single. So let's say they use it 1 year, okay, and they come down the next year, they're gonna have to, it's gonna have to be linked to a new table to store that information in every year.
No, it'd be a matter of changing you know, like a query call, you know, a query qualifier.
Okay, so I get 8675309.
Yeah.
Which is fun to say, by the
way.
That's
awesome.
And then, okay, so I put all this data in for third grade. Okay?
Yeah.
And let's say I keep this database until the next year. Mm-hmm. And how am I going to enter that the new information form?
For
8675309.
By starting, so a new record.
We're going to have two records for the same student.
So this will be stuff that you're going to have to repeat.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So that would all be the same.
And then this would be now 2005, well maybe, there would actually be a couple in between there, 2005 fall results a year later, so that you could pull up all this information, how it varies for this one student between all these different years, while still keeping your student information throughout. That makes sense why some of that stuff's in there.
How many years do you want to put on that? 2005, 2006?
Well, that's the thing. I didn't put any type of provisional value in there so that it could go for as long as one wanted to. And so, like, we could set up a query based upon, you know, just some type of sort order ascending.
How is the data entered?
Yeah, I haven't got to the form yet. Or even,
okay.
I mean, it could be entered in this table just like this, where one goes through and, you know, types in their classroom information, let's say. And
which,
then.
Which, in our case, they import all that. It'd already be set up for them.
Yeah. Like this is set up. So, I mean, and you can see that the only stuff that's static is my name, gender, ethnicity, and my free and reduced, and all that other stuff. My years, my grade, the teachers, the sessions, and my scores are all going to vary. So that now we have that flexibility that we were talking about, being able to, you know, keep it for.
Maybe, you know, if you took the free and reduced and you moved it over into the other table, because that could be something.
But that's
any other suggestions?
Is it going to be flat database or relational database?
The way I have it right now is just a simple relationship between student ID and student ID. So that it's going to, there's a one-to-many relationship between the.
Okay.
So there's one student information ID, and it corresponds to multiple student IDs because this table here is going to house all of them. So you'll be able to access my student information from there.
But from a logistical standpoint,
mm-hmm.
How is it that the school is going to enter the grades for 1,400 students? How are they going to enter the ITBS scores that they get from ITBS?
Well, based upon the things that we had talked about, is this what you're...
Well, what I'm asking, I mean, does that mean that they're going to have somebody sit down
and type in for 1,400 students, let's say there's 20 of them, mm-hmm. they're going to type in 280,000 grades. It's not 280,000. I got a decimal point there.
Yeah.
But if you had, according to student number, you could take that information, put it in Excel, put it according to student number. So then basically, your student number that on this table and each of the grades, each of these columns should be the same. You know what I'm saying? And then import that information.
But somebody's still going to have to input data into an Excel.
So how can you automatize it so that the data would automatically end up in the student's records? You get data from ITBS for the year 2005. Okay. How do you automatize it so that the data automatically ends up in the student record?
They're called secretary.
No, secretary doesn't count. What if... Well, I'm not going to come up with an answer. I want you guys to think about that. Think of a way in, because the problem is that there's too much manual labor here. Remember, you're dealing with a relational database, and so you've got this relational database thing going on. Why don't you use the power of it? Is there any way you can get the information in here without having to type it in using a relational database schema?
I mean, do they give you Excel?
Well, let's assume. I mean, I don't know what format it's in, but let's
all
assume.
All I've ever gotten is a hard copy like this.
I know.
Well, I'm sure that it's soft someplace. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's assume, and I don't know the answer to this one, but for what we're going to say is, let us assume that yes, indeed, the ITBS company will indeed give you a soft electronic copy of your information. And they'll give it to you on an annual basis. So the question is, what are you going to do with it? Now, the problem is that you've got great possibilities in error and things like that when somebody sits there and is counting away numbers all day long, right? Mm-hmm. So what is a way, if they give you this information, how can you get it into your records?
Here, can I show you an example?
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe this would work, but
I don't know.
I'm just asking questions. I'm not giving answers.
Can we make another assumption?
What?
That this school has power grade or power school?
Whatever you want to make.
Okay. Because I think we know that it does.
Okay.
Well, no, because this teacher leader group doesn't just come from Price Lab. This teacher leader group
from the Metzger.
It's focused on.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Is he going to want to take it other places?
I think he just wants to see it happen.
Okay.
Get out of your seat.
It's final shirt.
Okay. So did you get this from Sherry?
Yeah. Actually, the other guy.
This is the file. So, like, when I got ready to enter all my mini course names, I had my secretary, but we can probably do it on our own if we wanted to. She just put it in Excel, and I imported all of it.
Okay, demographic stuff. So she used PowerSchool and put it into Excel.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so when you look at, and disregard my students' names, so I'm going to pull it up quick. Maybe this would work. So let's say we're doing 8th grade. So this is Power School. This is what we keep track of all their stuff on. So So we're going to look at Jessica and disregard her name because I can probably get in trouble for this. But here's our data. And basically, they could take this data and put it in Excel.
Okay.
And then what we could do is we could import that data into Excel or into Access from that. So it basically set up all of our fields and all those things for us. See what I'm saying? So I don't even think we even have to, if somehow we could get the people to get that information to them. I mean, right now all it's showing is me from last year. So as soon as we got eighth grade stuff, we could take and make a comparison between 6th, 7th, and 8th. According to individual.
So you're doing it on a student-by-student basis?
No, what I'm saying is that we could get all the old data from 6th grade, we can take that new the old data from 7th grade, 8th grade comes up, then we import all that data too, now we've taken the step of entering all of it out of the picture. So all the two teachers have to do is sit down and basically do the analyzation part of it. And we had all of those things set up for them and had those different reports made, had the different things already set up, then we could take those, make those comparisons between the 2080 and the 4060.
So how do you design a database that could optimize the use of all that data in electronic format?
We'd have to be walking through the process of importing that info.
Pardon?
We'd have to have some directions for them to sit down so they could learn how to import all that data.
Okay.
And then have basically give them a disk with their Access program on there. Say this is how you're going to import your data, assuming they're going to get this disk with that information on there. And then have all the other things, the reports and all the other things set up previously for them with queries to identify these groups of students.
Okay.
So you'd be able to click on those different queries or reports and produce that.
Okay. But as far as the actual design of the data in the database, you're talking about having a separate record for each student and then having somebody type all that stuff in. Now, I want to bend your brain a little bit, and I want you to think about, is there some way that could work easier? That was a poorly worded sentence. Is there some way that this could happen more efficiently? And let's assume that you can get this data in a table form, Access table form.
I'm missing the question here.
Why would we have to recreate?
I mean, why?
When I say this data, I mean the data being the testing data.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the question I'm asking is, how do you take that data from in Access table form, and how do you put that into your student database that you're going to be using?
Make a relationship between the data, find some.
So what would that look like?
So basically, we would.
You guys might want to grab a pen or something like that and draw it up on the whiteboard or something.
See, I guess what I'm missing from this is how. I still don't. I can't get my
head
around what you're saying.
I think I know what you're saying. I think. I mean, it's the relationship thing. If you had all the demographics like your graph.
Why don't you take that and drag it over here so we can hear it?
Want to go over there with it? Or?
Yeah. So the microphone will pick up your ideas.
I can speak louder.
Well, that way we can get everybody. That's a better place for it anyway.
Makes sense.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes sense.
So, it's just the way that you have it set up already.
Okay.
It's just rebuilding a relationship between the ID number of the test and the ID number of the student.
Might work. Let's see.
So if you had your student table, see, now you're like, I guess you can't. Okay, and then you had all your name, and then your student number. That's a really bad marker. And then all your other demographics. And then you had your test with
you can use computer.
NPR and all the different things. But all I have to do is find something that connects the student number from this one, the student number of that one. And this would be, we got multiple grades over here, so it would be a one-to-many thing, because a student will have multiple grades because they're taking year after year after year after year of tests, just like you had set up before.
Yeah. I get that. I guess I understand that part. I'm not understanding the full depth of the problem. I didn't think we're setting up a school-based, school-wide, district-wide database. I was setting up something for individual teachers to break down either by fifth grade or their individual classroom. So we're not talking numbers of 28,000.
But I'm still saying that if I'm a teacher,
yeah,
and if you can make it so all I have to do is get a file from my secretary, mm-hmm. and that'll put in the data, I'll be much happier than if I'm a teacher and you expect me to put in, 15 scores for each of my 30 students, or if I'm a high school teacher and it's each of my 180 students. Like I said, this is technology. Let's use the technology. I'm just asking questions to see if there's things you can do to make things a little simpler.
What we need is to get from here. This, I don't think, this isn't a big concern.
Yeah.
We need to somehow get to the charts and the simple analysis, reports. How are we going to get that from a table that we don't have access to in order to base any type of relationship between a chart and a table?
But
we don't have that middle part yet to work with.
I don't understand what you mean.
Like, we don't have, if we go based upon this model here, we're assuming that's, we don't have that NPR, that ITBS table to work from, to base any type of architecture for a chart methodology.
But when you would import that information, it would automatically create its own table.
It would create its own table, but in order for a table, in order for a chart to develop, you can't just make a chart for a table that doesn't exist.
No, but the thing is that we're just basically creating an outline form for teachers to put in that data somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how this comes in, to where they don't have to sit here and go through one by one. And that they can somehow get to where we can make it like a template, where we can get to the point where a chart will come up.
But see,
that's
impossible. I mean, the chart needs something to latch onto.
So we couldn't use like a report wizard to make a report over a table that hasn't existed yet, because we have to import it.
Yeah.
We can't. We don't have the architecture isn't there. The structure itself isn't there to support up an automatic table system, which is what.
But if you had if you had a table set up, and the teachers could actually copy that information and paste it in off the existing one, that would be better than, because then the table would be there. We would be able to identify in that report what fields we want to include, what organization, but then the data wouldn't be in there yet.
Yeah.
It's like what I did the mini course thing. I made my table out, and then I opened up my access. I made sure that the table, that the information I was copying from one was the same as the other.
Yeah, see, that's the one thing where I see a problem with this. I've taken a thing from ITBS. From our project's perspective, is we don't know the fields that are identified on an Excel from ITBS.
Or what they could produce for us.
Well, can we ask Dr. Henning?
We could.
An example of what
we
can come.
I asked my principal. I said, "Do they ever give us? Are we able to get an Excel, a soft, a computerized copy of the ITBS?" And he goes, "I don't even know."
That's so stupid. They should be sending them to every single school.
I don't even know if that's possible.
So maybe is our
if
that's
possible.
It's stored somewhere,
But
you know?
If it's possible, should we not even worry about creating a database, but writing a set of instructions for how to sort in Excel based upon your class and how to create a chart based upon your class? I mean, why even go through all this access?
Because this is a database class, and this is the culminating activity.
But what I'm saying from the client's perspective, though, I mean, why are we making him or her jump through hoops?
Quite frankly, you could probably do all this stuff with PowerSchool.
Yeah.
I mean, all the capabilities are there.
You could actually teach the teachers how to drill down and do all that sort of stuff. I don't know PowerSchool that much, but I sat through an hour workshop on it once. But I'm guessing you could drill down.
Yeah, but see, for the most part, the schools that they're going to be coming from aren't going to be utilizing PowerSchool, so that's why I think
Well, what I'm saying is that for this project, mm-hmm. what we need to do is create a system where we've got a database,
yeah.
and that database includes tables or a system so that we can enter or look at data for the student. Yeah. And you might have a form that could have all of the data that they need in it. You know, I mean, you could have a form. You could have a one form that would be all of their ITBS scores.
All for the whole entire...
For their 12 years. It's just some of it would be empty.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's...
And if you have a standardization of the name of the file...
I think
before
of the table.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. The most important that we should do is knowing the whole items in ITBS itself. I mean that by looking at the how ITBS look like, we can consider about the table that we wanna create.
I think a table was called for based upon...
It's right here.
Yeah, what he wanted. So he wanted...
Well, actually, he just wanted NGE.
IGE, NPR.
Well, he just wanted NGE and IPR, NPR, didn't he? Did he want IGE,
but
too?
It,
he
had it written if down. Like this, it, okay. it can be difficult for us to identify the number of the students. Students' number. If the test look like...
Well, right, and I think what you think of what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. What you're doing is you're putting up roadblocks. Okay.
Well,
and what we can do, I mean, you take a look here. We know what the record, what the specific scores are, right?
Yes.
Because he gave us this sheet. So we know which ones have them and which ones don't, and what we want to look at. And so this will tell us what those fields are. Now, there's a lot of fields. Because it's 10 across and 2 or 3 down, so you're talking 20 or 30 fields per year, per student. But you're just dealing with per student right now.
The thing I was wondering about when you're talking about your forms is, yeah, we can get to that step. But again, your original question of the data entry, though, is still hanging. We can create the most elegant forms, the most functional forms, but mm-hmm. your original question of the data entries still looms, you know, it's still unanswered to a large degree. If you're talking about forms, you're conceding that we're going to be typing it in.
You know, and there's a part of me that thinks that if a teacher really wants to get this information, if they're going to feel it's valuable, I don't think that I would have a huge problem sitting down and typing it for my 136 kids, because it's only going to be 2 scores. It gives me time to look at those scores. It shows that information to me. I agree that some...
Okay, well, let me just change the rules then. I'm changing the rules, and the rules are
cool.
the teacher isn't going to enter them.
Okay.
The rule is that the teacher, that the data will come from the office or from ITBS or wherever it comes from. It'll be an electronic format in the table. And then what you need to create is something that will access that table, or that will accept that table and then access it.
So I think we can get Rob's even done this, we can access a table. But our, you know, task of creating charts based upon a table that
doesn't exist
is, you know.
Well, so what you do is you make a couple tables. You dummy it up. And as, you know, I'll talk to him, make a couple tables for 25 students. And, you know, you guys can do it pretty quickly. And you use that data, and you use that to fool around with the charts and fiddle that out.
Yeah.
I think you may run into a problem. I noticed that you had on your fields that you've got one field for, you know, Asian, Asian American and African American, one for each of those, right?
Ethnicity.
Under ethnicity?
Yeah.
Where's the big table that you had up there?
What were you working from?
Oh, that big table that I was working? No, that
he did a big too.
That wasn't one. I just downloaded the ITBS because I wanted to know whether or not the ITBS could produce an Excel for us. My question was whether or not they actually produce Excels. So I downloaded what they use. Not that I want somebody else to do my homework for me.
No. I was looking at the way that was set up, and it looks to me like what you're going to need to do is, scroll over to where it gets into ethnicity. Because each of the, what is all that?
I don't know what it is. See, I don't know what it is.
So you downloaded this from ITBS?
Yes.
Okay, well, when we get down here to ethnicity, keep going. Good golly. Okay, right there. It seems to me, let's see.
This is like a yes or no thing.
Well, that's what it is. And it seems to me that you'd be able to do it where you could sort, where under ethnicity you could have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, each of those being a code for a different ethnicity. And it seems that would be a more efficient way to do it. Or is that something you have to work out?
Also, I had a little, what Andy's, a little Dropbox that came down.
A Dropbox?
Under ethnicity. I just put in a few because I didn't know it was specific. But then I can just go and click it.
Okay.
I had a lot. Mine was mostly just one big table, and it just had box drops for
Asian.
Like grade. Oh. I did 1 through 6, and then you go down and click through that. And then teacher name. Those are all Dropboxes.
I mean, when I'm looking at this, I'm trying to think of level 1. I don't even know what they're trying to do here. But this is something you would be able to enter. It's just one big sheet. What we could do is just say, mail us your CD or email us the information. We'll put them into data tables for you for a small fee.
There we go.
And then we'll send them back to you, and then we will already have these things set up for you. And then the tables will, we'll set up queries and identify, or show them how to do that.
I was just thinking, and the idea that I'm showing, that I'm talking about, Your idea with the different records per year would make a lot of sense if we're also worried about the demographics. In other words, where was he living in second grade versus where was he living in fourth grade?
No, because that would just, you could alter that student table. So the demographic information would be quote unquote current. It wouldn't be retroactive. It wouldn't be separate.
No, I'm just saying that, your idea of having a separate record for each year for the student would be beneficial if you wanted to keep that data for the demographics over a longitudinal period.
Yeah, so because there's two sessions of
ITBS.
Yeah, even if you're going to just keep it inside one classroom.
Right, so does that mean that you'd have two multiple records for that?
So instead of having to retype ethnicity, name, teacher, well, obviously, we have to go with teacher.
But do you have to retype all that?
So all that stuff from the student table, you'd have to retype.
Well, let's not worry about the demographics.
Okay.
About them changing over a period of time. What we do want to look at is he wanted to have a longitudinal study, or be able to study longitudinal changes amongst kids over a 3-year period, right?
So that's why that's in there, so that you can disaggregate it based upon those different years, and even further, teacher, even further, grade. So,
right.
I mean, that's why that,
okay.
that field's there.
But like I said, let's assume that the stuff is coming in. We don't want the teacher to have to re-enter all that stuff. I'm going to go get you a couple pens, because that one's pretty shot, so you guys can discuss this.
Okay.
But by the time this evening is over, which is in about 25 minutes, what we need to have is you need to have a plan, and you need to have assignments to each other as to who's going to be doing what. We also have to have assignments for Kathy and Sandra, so that they have something to do as well. Now, you may work in pairs or however you want to do it, but we need to make sure that there's something that is created by next week. So you can start putting that together, okay? And you want to do whatever you have to do. I'll go get you some more materials.
And speak loud. Loud video, I'm sorry. We'll make it an edit.
There's any way we could, if we're assuming that we're going to get it in an Excel, we could take this information.
Do they use Excel for that?
I guess so. I
don't think U of I would actually use Excel for it, but I think they can export it to schools in Excel.
Yeah. Because when they take the ITBS, they're entering all this demographics crap anyway. They're entering their student number, they're entering their ethnicity. You know, what would really be beneficial would be to get a copy of a student of ITBS form. Those would be our demographics, whatever they identify. And then if we could just somehow make it so that when the Excel comes in, all we're looking at is their student number and the things that he wants us to do. Have a table already made up for them, so when we import them, the names of the table, the field names of the Excel and the field names of our table are the same, so it all falls in line with each other.
And that might work. I mean, that would work.
Because then we can make the queries according to sort these tables, even though they don't have data in them. Sort these tables according to ethnicity, whatever.
When you did yours, when you imported from Excel, did the fields from Excel come over to Access?
Yeah.
See, that's the problem.
But I don't...
So if we create this, you know...
But we can probably... Let me go from the very beginning, and we'll do that importing thing and see what it does.
Yeah, so create a... Or use one of the tables already. Yeah.
Okay.
See if you import on top of a...
Here, do this.
You import over an existing table? Will the world end if you do that?
No, let's put my data on here and import it into your Access. See what I'm saying? So this Excel is all I have on here is your grade, name, male or gender. You can get rid of this room number because we don't care about that.
But see, these are the types of things, these are the steps that we're going to have to either take into consideration or wholly remove.
That's my question. Like every year, we might get new things from ITBS, and if we're like selecting, we only want to look at this to put into our table, how are, like, we have to like write up instructions for teachers to do that? Because every year it's going to be a new set of all this big bunch of data.
Yeah, but you think about it, their student numbers should be the same.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if somehow we could take that new data from the next year and enter it using the same parameters as the student number. I mean, it's like when I got ready to roll in for graduate school. Man, I was still, my student number I hadn't used for 15 years, but it's the same student number. Mm-hmm. So when I pull up stuff according to my student number, which is, you know, everything, it still brings up my mom and dad's address from 15 years ago. Even though all my other stuff that I've taken is updated, So that's the problem. I mean, I think we all know how to do this, but it's just getting someone else to know how to do it.
That's what I'm saying. Because, well, what I'm thinking, okay, like what you guys are talking about is if we have some sort of Excel spreadsheet and ITV as scores, right?
If we get it from them, yeah.
Like, it'd be similar to this thing.
Yeah, whatever we were playing with earlier, you know.
It'd be electronic, right? But are we trying to make it so we're only concentrating on the two things for each student? So we'd have to somehow select
that.
But what I'm saying is if we do it, you know, we can do that no problem, just to have an example. But we're going to have to teach
members,
teacher if they do that.
MPR. Let's just put 12, 12. She's really dumb. So imagine this is our data, even though it's going to have a lot more crap in there than we want. Could, I mean, if they got this, could you think that a teacher or a secretary or somebody could go through and delete all the data that they would not need except for this?
Four.
See, my secretary probably could.
Yeah, but I think we're talking about trying to get as much of a hands-off situation as possible. Which, if it was possible, I think someone would have thought of it already.
See, that's the thing is, I'm like, there's going to have to be something. I mean, I don't know how it's...
And you made a good point. The Power School and all these things already do this. What we're looking for is just like a little user-friendly something that's just going to sit on a teacher's, you know, desktop that they're going to use, you know, a couple times a year.
Can
we don't need to get into these big, grand, elaborate things. We're dealing with
but how do you teach them how to select just the few to import it? Because if you can get import it in, I mean, it's not going to be a big deal.
Have you tried importing that in? Yeah, Robin.
Yeah, no.
Just mine.
Give me yours.
I think it's just sitting on the desktop there.
Right here.
Under Henning Project. Underneath Recycle Bin. Right there. I think
it's in a folder.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're gonna open yours up. And let's do student info.
Let's see if we can import it in there.
Okay. Edit. Import.
I'm interested to see here what's going to happen.
Desktop. And import in Excel. Okay. Your spreadsheet file contains more than one worksheet. Which worksheet are we using? Sheet 1, create main. See, what we have to do
is... Oh, you just want sheet 1. You don't want sheet 2 or 3. Those are the other sheets I come with.
Just sheet 1. I'd have to select all of them.
Yeah.
Okay, so what we'd have to do is we'd have to make the table whatever corresponds with whatever information they would give us. So we'd have to basically change this to your table to match this information. So how do we create a table if we don't know what data they provide us?
And why do we, and ITBS is going to give us?
First row contains columns, headings. You had to save them in Flash, didn't you?
Yeah, mine.
Yeah. So in a new table, we want to do it in an existing table, student info table. Already open. It's not less important because our headings are not the same.
Yeah. See, this way, if we get it from ITBS, what it's going to come in as.
Mm-hmm. Then you can make tables that are corresponding to that.
But if we get it from ITBS, isn't it going to be for like a school?
Well, okay, well, how about this? What about this?
That's the thing.
What if
we
make
so
it?
Much information, how are you going to narrow it down?
But see, the thing is that they're only going to be viewing this. They're not going to be viewing it in a table. They're going to only be viewing it in a report. We set up a report in an isolated toilet just to look at these fields.
But we don't have a table for that to do it, though.
But if we set up a table that was basically a mirror image without the data of whatever ITBS sent us, they could send us a buttload of info. We won't allow them to look at it. We can just say, we're going to set up the reports. They're only going to look at these fields. See what I'm saying?
See what happens.
We got this huge monster table, and all we'd have to do is set up reports. We can set up a certain number of queries for whatever he wants to look at. Set up all these different reports.
Change the pinning. Change my table to match the exact.
This
label.
One?
Yeah. So put a design view and like have it match the exact labels of yours, your Excel. Let's just see if it's even possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. One of these is text, whatever you want. Just we'll leave them for text right now.
We'll just see what happens.
And we'll save two tables.
Yes. Yep.
Okay, there we go. Now we're going to import.
Did you take off the
checkbox?
Yeah, take all that stuff off.
And just enter that information. Can I delete this?
Yeah.
I got turn those. Look up.
Yeah, those stupid.
Okay.
I think it's last name. Where did you change it to grade?
Well, let's just put a dad in there for a second. There. Let's make name primary field.
Yeah, that's just the way I have it set up. So.
No, but eventually we'll want the student number to be primary key.
Sure.
And we don't want to mess it around.
Probably we can do that. I sometimes do import, but
change it
not
name,
not from Excel.
Key, so that there's a value in there. Now delete that whole row. Can you do that? Doesn't that work?
This one?
Yeah, just so we don't have to keep.
Delete right
there. There we go. There. Now we don't have to worry about that thing popping up.
Now we're going to import it.
No, Dad, you have to close this one.
Oh, yeah.
Import the table, yes, right?
Display table.
You can't change that because that's the table name.
Finish.
But there's sheet one import error.
That is a sheet that's created with all the information that came in that wasn't imported. Hey, look at that.
Now what the heck?
And that's all. Now let's remember.
It works.
Yeah, but now it's sorted. I'm sorting this all away.
What did it do? Oh, did it sort it by the primary key, which is name?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. That's a train wreck. know it's possible. They just can't be afraid of error messages.
Oh, yeah. That would go over real well.
I think your computer's about to explode. Okay. Yeah, just keep going.
Okay, and then we could have...
Now let's see. Can we... Let's not save this. Can we do that? Not save this? This import that we did? Or let's just create a whole new table.
Okay, close this.
With, yeah. With those same...
Creating...
Those same headings as in the Excel. Now let's try and create a chart off of a blank table.
Off of a blank table?
Yeah, that's what we're going to
table.
Yeah, well, off of a table because, you know, all we're going to have are headings when.
Yeah, so we want to create.
So if it's
table by entering data.
From zero,
no,
import and get results.
Okay, so you just want me to basically create a table.
Just like you did with the. Yeah, just like that.
Did you guys do section H, lesson H, or unit H in here?
Yeah, that's what we're doing for today.
Great. I think I'm going to let you extend that a week because...
You think that that...
I think I downplayed it last week.
I didn't do it.
Did you do it?
I got through like half of it. The first part, like going through the section, didn't work for me at all. Like half of the stuff it said in the book that was supposed to come up never came up. And then I was confused as to where I was supposed to go.
Okay.
So I have like my skills and the
Okay. Now can we?
Well, the nice thing is it has stuff about importing
do?
Data.
Can we just even
create
a form?
I looked at that, and that's
yeah,
what I kept thinking is how to import it.
The table or the other
test
one. Yeah, let's just see what happens. Yeah, this is what I
would do. Just one. Just so.
Yeah, it's just the dorky.
Yeah.
Right there. Okay. So now
saw those pull up menus there.
Well, let's see what happens.
Now, what are we going to do? Import all that information?
We import it and see if it'll fill into this form.
Okay, so we want to import it into this data right
yeah,
here.
Yeah, but remember, you have to have the table closed. And I'm guessing probably with the form closed,
yeah, okay.
It'll just explode. Okay, so we got a blank table, we got a blank form. We're going to input with all the fields the same into it. Crash and burn, Maverick, do it.
Yes.
Do you? Yes, yes.
Okay. So let's get rid of that before we get confused with it.
Okay, so.
Okay, now let's open our form up, right?
Yep. Whatever.
Look at there. All their names are in there.
It's kind of solid.
That's Roger that.
So we could.
So if we make it, if we make, sorry, Kelly.
No,
sorry.
I was just trying to. Go ahead.
So we make a form, our table, that is identical to whatever information.
100% identical.
Every heading, everything has to be exactly the same. They import that information into that table, that's already set up for them, but also has all the queries, all the reports that he wants to analyze. All they have to do is import that information. And we're going to make the queries and reports only looking at the things that he wants to look at.
So we're going to have to set up a query for each grade.
Grade.
And we don't know teacher, so we can't even do that. So we're going to have to make some. There's some give and take here. We can't, you know, set up for imaginary teachers, and we don't want them in there setting up their own queries. So we're just going to have to do it by grade because we know grades. We can do 3, 4, 5. There's all 379 of them.
360.
Hmm. Woo!
That's fun. 379, yeah.
We can do that.
Perfect. Okay, you guys have about 10 minutes.
So, what are the questions we still need to answer?
I think we should make the people out in Never Never Land just do everything.
Say that real loud.
We need a little research. Like.
We need to figure out what form does ITBS come in Excel? And
does first of does do
does
they
it.
do they send it out yet in the spreadsheet form? Second, if they do, what are their field headings? Third, is it based upon teacher How far do they disaggregate out the Excel?
The students excel in ITBS.
How to open the CD file in Excel?
The student data record layout on CD. There's the layout right there.
What did any of that mean?
What the heck? It's like French. Deleted.
What?
I looked at this earlier before we had all this wonderful thought, but I guess we're learning something here, so that's probably important.
I didn't make any sense. No, is that that stupid standard?
Now, here, look at this.
Well, those are the columns.
What is the Dean limited column?
What?
Fixed with field positions. Third. No.
Now these,
well, that's,
these
that's
are the columns.
Solid.
This is, these are all the columns that we were looking at before on that other doohickey thing I downloaded.
Oh, that's psychotic.
See what, I'm saying? So when they send us the information, we take it, and it will look like... Hold on a second.
Oh,
that huge one that we had open before.
Oh, no.
So we're going to have...
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we'll get all that information. But again, if teachers aren't going to look at it, we don't care how much information they put in there. We just set our queries and our forms up for the specific information they want.
We need to set up those fields, though. Field headings on a table.
We'll just copy and paste them off that Excel into a
what
table.
What were there, 200 and some?
200 and some. They were nasty.
That's a fun copy and paste job, yeah.
That's the definition of carpal tunnel.
No, well, it's import.
Repetitive stress syndrome.
Or no, Kim, you can... Yeah.
Now, don't get too clever.
What's that?
Okay, you need to figure out what the jobs are of people. This research, you know, has to be with construction and, you know, getting the hard hats on and getting your hands dirty.
What are the things that we have to...
So far,
what do you
have,
think, Callie?
Well, the questions that Andy was saying that we need to find out, which...
Okay, so we think...
This is what we think. This is the table we're going to get.
So they get them.
Somehow we have to take this entire thing and make a table.
See, that doesn't make any sense, though.
It doesn't. But
ADME, what is it? Like, I've seen of these.
But see, then this thing right here tells us all we'll ever want to know about those fields.
Does it actually separate the ethnicity?
Yeah.
Like
see,
on the
column 20 through 70, or here, let's do the ethnicity. Here we go.
Holy monkey.
Ethnicity. Multi-account? Okay, wow. I'm going to get a job in the Department of Ed in Iowa, or the ITBS company. We can figure all this stuff out. Yeah, look here. Fields 188 through 195 are dealing with these talented and gifted and other things. So, 185.
So they have a separate field for each selection.
Yep.
Yeah.
For every bubble they put on that demographic page, they have a separate field for it. For every field.
And in order for us to input it so that we can select it and make a report, we have to put everything in.
Now, that's assuming, though, I mean, this is something that's on a website. What is something that Joe Blow High School actually is getting?
If they send it to us, then can we go through and delete what we don't want?
See, I, that's a step that we don't think that anybody who's a normal classroom teacher is going to be able to do.
No.
Oh, that's true.
Or even somebody.
But if we label the table "Do not open," then they won't open it. They don't know that they have that much data in there.
Tell you what. What do you say that we assume that? I mean, like I said, it doesn't make sense. But what do you say we assume that it automatically that we let Apple take care of the problem?
But they, the reason they've got these specifics out here, these specs out here, is so the companies like Apple and TRS and all those guys who are putting these together, can they know where the specs are. And they're the ones that get paid big for that. Now, would you like to make it so that you can actually have your secretary at the office download into a file the data that you need?
I was going to say, can you ask them specifically, these are the ones that you
have? Well, what I'm saying is, you'd use the secretary like
file.
Rob did.
Yeah, like, for example, when I asked her, I said, hey, Donna, could you make me an Excel spreadsheet that included the following fields? And I said, all I need is their name, their grade, their homeroom, their gender, and their student number. And so can we make the assumption that if we asked a secretary to give us the fields that we want, they should be able to give that to us?
Because the school that we're doing this for, there are other ones as well, but they have PowerSchool.
Yeah.
Therefore, that this could be information that's merely taken off their hard drive, out of their database, and put into a format that we can then import into our project. Right?
And I probably could have said to her, could you also include in that thing, could you also include their math score, this score? And when you look at this one, and sorry, I got to type it all in again, but when you look at this one, they can sort that according to whatever they want. I mean, PowerSchool is a big relational database. I mean, that's all it is. So she could have found, they even use the same terminology. I mean, you print up something in PowerSchool, it's called a report. I mean, if you want to make a query, it's called a query. I mean, so when we take a look at Marlon, I won't make any comments about my students. Let's see. I think that when they look at his test scores, even though they don't have, number and percentage, that's what he wants. Math, reading, science. Boy, he really took a dive on that one.
It looks like some of the data isn't put in, like percent. We don't know if that's percentage or percentile.
Yeah, and I think that he is unique. I think that they put it in for other people.
I didn't see it. The other person didn't have it either.
Yeah, but I think that's not a lack of PowerSchool. I think that if Price Lab has that, I think that we could probably get that in Excel.
You mean that other school?
That other school out there in
La La Land,
the United States. Because I mean, basically, they would give that CD, and basically have to get them from giving that CD to you or emailing that attachment to you, entering that data to access, and clicking on the different things that we'd have preset for them. Basically, I get from that step to the next step. I don't think that'd be too hard or anything. I mean, the thing is that are we assuming that these people don't know access? They don't have no knowledge of access.
Yeah, but let's assume we can train them.
Could put in those little
text.
We're
going
to have to have.
Well, I figured out how you can do a dynamic web pages if you keep it on just a computer. It's not all that difficult. So that they would just be working through a browser for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like this.
Yeah, I think you can only open up in Explorer.
Oh, that's right. I'm still open, don't I? Well, maybe get yours, and I think yours will look better. Turn off the pop.
Just click on that yellow main bar there. Allow block content. See. I figured out how to get past this if it's all stored on one thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's a form that I put up, and that would be an online form.
And then we would have a dynamic report that would come up, too.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do this without all that middleman SQL server stuff and keep it stored on.
I mean, because they have to use a PC anyway. Why not make it a specific PC that they have a lab in it?
Why would they have to use a PC? You mean instead of a Mac? Oh, that's right. Well, it's online if they don't.
Oh, see, we're not going to make it online.
Okay.
Online. It's going to be...
You're gonna be
not even internet,
it's
intra-computer, yeah, so the web would be that.
Okay.
So maybe that'd be, you know, I'll look into that more. I mean, there's a task.
Why don't you make a list of these tests?
Yeah, because we're in that.
And make sure you can pass out the jobs.
So we got web interface, ITBS.
Hey, Yami, you want me to trash your expanded database? It's not even going to stop right here. You want to throw that in the trash.
What are we looking for with ITBS information?
ITBS? Maybe
we got that.
You also said how far out did it send
it? So a question would be, is it for whole school? Because these are the types of things we're going to need in order to set up queries for it to work. But then if we look at it like with PowerSchool, we don't even need to know some of the fields.
You can simply identify what fields you want.
Yeah.
Somebody should probably have to talk to Henning.
Who's going to talk to Dr. Henning?
I can email him and talk about PowerSchool stuff.
Okay.
The question would be, can we produce an Excel program from PowerSchool that includes the information that you need?
I think what I'd do is verify with them the fields you want to include.
Okay. So,
and then assume the PowerSchool can create that.
I'm sure. Here's these fields that we talked about before. We have a list of fields already, name, student number, year, date. So we'll make sure that he wants all those before we have them. Or maybe we just want to assume that he wants all those and just, we can always delete that information later. But
well, he's your client, so
yeah.
You want to make sure that
he's happy.
Should we ask him if it's PowerSchool, or are you saying that we're going with the PowerSchool premise? That's where
sure.
We're running from? Okay.
Let's do that.
So now we don't have to do 270. Yeah, I mean, that's your job. Plan B, set up 270.
Does Dr. Hain also has WebCT, I assume?
Yeah.
Can he get into our discussion?
Yes. I can bring him in.
Could you add? Yeah, you can add
sure.
Him.
Okay.
And then I can email
it
him and say,
good.
We're having
good
an
idea.
Ongoing
yes.
discussion about this, and then
okay.
We can all ask him questions, basically, whenever we need it.
We are right web now. Interface. We think we got most of our ITBS questions answered with the exception of client-specific questions. What else are we looking for?
Once we get our table set up, then you can start making queries and reports and stuff, but I'm not going to specifically yet.
Well,
let's have someone set up a table.
Let's assume that these list of fields that we have here are going to be our fields.
Okay.
And then if we wanted to delegate, one job would be to set up a form.
Yeah, set up a table.
Or sorry, set up a table with those fields in it. And I don't think, if we're going to do this from PowerSchool, they're going to give us all on one Excel. I don't think we need two tables. What do you guys think about that? I mean,
there's a car wreck right in there.
What does that
what
word?
Is that?
I don't know. It looked like my B ate my E. I don't know. It's been a while since I've had to stand up and write on a board. I don't know.
Do you think we need more than one table? If it's all going to be.
If we're just going to upload it into.
No, because
for simplicity's sake.
Yeah.
Well, no, we could have, no, we could have two. Because if we do PowerSchool, we could have the secretary set up one table with
all the demographics.
And
yeah,
so it would be one table. So what were the demographics that he keyed on? Ethnicity, SES, gender, height, weight, eye color.
Name, student ID, year, date, ethnicity, SES, gender, grade, teacher. The other only thing is how we can get that information from the teacher. I don't know.
Well, see, we're not getting the information. Remember, we're getting it from...
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, are they going to be able to produce in PowerSchool the teacher they had for that class? Because now we're linking tables inside of PowerSchool, combining their schedule to cross-check their score. Kelly's like...
That's your job. You're table boy. You know PowerSchool. You're table boy.
I don't know PowerSchool. I use it once in a while.
I don't understand what you're saying.
The table boy.
So he's very table. Okay, write that down.
That's it. Table boy.
No, to be honest with you, can we leave here and then delegate this in the discussion toolbar? Well, let's say by next Monday, and what I can do tomorrow is I can, during my prep period, I can sit down with my secretary and say, hey, what can PowerSchool do? And could you produce these things for me?
Well, there are a couple things that you need. I mean, you want to find out about the fields and make sure those are all right, right? Mm-hmm. So you need somebody to interact with Henning and then bring that data. The thing is that this stuff needs to get done.
Yeah.
And we need to figure out a way in which the work will be equally distributed. I mean, we have Table Boy over there, and he's doing all the work, and that's not equal distribution. And the things that you're going to need is we talked about the deliverables.
Yeah, we need to make a table.
Some of those deliverables are the directions. Some of the deliverables are forms, the interface that you're going to have. You might want to have some people design interface. Some of it is going to be reports and how that's going to be. But it's, like I said, it's real important that you identify who's going to be providing what.
Yeah, so like designs for reports, because unless with that table, we can't even start building.
I know, that was my thing.
So maybe like a layout though for reports and a layout for like what is it going to visually look like?
Why don't this? How about you take your tables that you have and email it to, or better, you know, email it to Callie and Yami, and then they can work on from that table. We'll assume mm-hmm. that table is correct. We can always go back through and add fields, but they will already have the outline of what those table or those forms are going to look like.
Now, let's talk schedule for a moment. So you're going to have this all done by next week, right?
No.
I didn't think so. So,
then we're going to be going down to the 20th or the 1st.
Exactly. So what I want to do is talk schedule. I'm proposing we take develop DB and put it down here on the 8th. What do you think?
Yeah.
So you guys will have this product up by the 8th. This is the week that we're going to be going down to Cedar Rapids. And next week, we won't have this due. In fact, it looks like what I want you to do is read chapter 6 so we can do some more discussion on chapter 6. I'll make it quick. I just want to make sure we talk a little bit. I just want to finish that chapter. And then you'll do some more. You want to really get ready to roll up the sleeves and get some serious work done, because you'll have talked so much on the discussion group. I just submitted a Dr. Henning's name into the WebCT people to add him to our discussion group, and I'll be contacting him tomorrow to tell him that they'd like to have communication with him that way. And what do you think? Do you think that's going to work? So we'll make it the 8th?
Yeah, and then if we could left us next Thursday.
Thanks, Keith.
What do you guys want to bring to the table for next Thursday, though?
Okay.
If I could figure out what PowerSchool can do for us.
That's a good start.
That would be something I could do.
And maybe you could email that information to...
I'll just put it on the discussion bar. I'll just leave it.
Yeah, put it on the discussion so that Yami, you build the table based upon Rob's information.
Mm-hmm.
And enforce that, the requirements. Yeah. And then if one of us wanted to basically ask Dr. Henny on the discussion thing, you know, get the final specs of what he wants, field names and stuff, then they could communicate that to Yami so that he can put together, turn the table together. And then if you wanted to email, I'm sorry, I'm taking over.
No, go ahead. I'm just standing.
If you want to email me your table to her, so maybe you can work out maybe one or two examples of a query or form.
I think
a query or report.
I think
you need a form.
And this table probably can be sent to the discussion room.
Yeah, I can attach it just as a post.
Everybody can see it,
and then
including Kathy and
Sandra.
I'll look at web interface, see if it'll work. Okay. I'll just use some example from the chapter materials. Just see if we can make a dynamic chart. That's the thing I'm concerned with, is making not just the input dynamic, but also the export, which is going to be your charts and your,
yeah,
you know, those. That's what I'm concerned about.
Because then if we came next week with some of those things done, we could do what we're doing today, you know, basically sit down and put it all together, and then hopefully then over that next time, maybe we could all work on sharing back and forth those charts and reports so that we can get them pretty much done before that.
Yeah, then we'd have like specific tasks.
Okay, and then what I would suggest doing is contact Sandy and Kathy and discuss with them how they're going to contribute. Make sure they get involved in the process.
Kathy and Sandy know that we're going to put this discussion out.
Yeah, I told them. I just talked to Kathy yesterday. But, I mean, the thing is, it's on WebCT. They're responsible for looking at WebCT and reading the things that are happening there. So you can just email them directly.
Okay. So next time.
I'll learn about Power School. Why don't you go ahead and make a film off of this table?
Just to see what
we can do. And then we can look at a form, and then also...
Yeah, see, like right now we're so... You know, we got to figure out what we can and can't do, so...
That's the thing. And I'll hopefully... Because I have Power School. I mean, everybody...
you want a form or you want queries and reports?
Why don't you do a query or a...
Well, if you're going to build a form, you're going to need a... At least...
Well, Callie's specialty is queries.
Some semblance of queries.
Yeah, maybe it's queries, because the whole thing is the user friendliness is going to come for them to click on
I
a query.
I get it now.
That's
the first year, I said anything. I understand
know what I'm saying?
Now. Okay, so I'm doing queries. We decided we're going to do queries for each grade.
Okay.
Or
why don't you see what kind of queries you can come up with? I mean, obviously, one query is going to be for students who are between the 40th and 80th percentile. Once we figure that one out, I mean...
What about pivot tables? Can you incorporate pivot tables into this?
Yami. I have no idea.
No, but I mean, it was in one of your chapters.
Yeah,
it was.
I'm sending email to Kathy and...
Okay. Okay. Are you doing that right now?
Yes.
Okay. But take a look at the pivot tables, because the pivot tables might be your answer.
Yeah.
We're going to be able to import it.
Pivot tables and be made off of the data at the very end of it.
Yeah. So.
And then that's built into Access.
Yeah, but if there's no data for us to, can you just set up an empty pivot table like you can an empty form like we just did?
Why don't? Kat, would you be able to just enter like 5 made up students and make a pivot table?
See, that's the thing though. It can't be 5 made up students. It has to be 0 because when we're handing this over, we're we can't have any examples in our tables, in our reports until we do a dry run with it.
Well, you know, you could request that Henning would ask the school for a file coming from their Power School, and you could use that for, I mean, you've got the data right here that's on paper. He's got to be able to get it electronically as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you simply ask them to provide that data for you. Because Aaron Spur is the
PowerSchool guru down there, and he would be able to help you.
I don't know if that'd be something we would want to request. That'd be something that like, you'd have to request.
Well, I could. I mean, you tell me what you need.
I think if they could give us an Excel with those things on it.
Okay.
And maybe even, I mean, we don't have names on this. So do we want to include names? I mean, obviously, the privacy issue there is probably...
Well, we could set it up as a possible field so that when they're dealing with it...
Yeah, we can enter some derogatory name or whatever, you know, just a number or something.
Or, yeah, what you could do is you could go through and you could start out and it could be... you could take names, but you could replace them with digits.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be John Doe 1, John Doe 2, John Doe, Jane Doe, Jane Doe, Jane Doe. Or Jane Doe Ray Me.
You know, but I don't think the pivot, if we're looking at it just, we're going to import all of our information, kind of like the Big Bang type of a thing, and then all this is going to happen, it's not going to work with pivot tables. Unless someone can figure out how to set up a structure for a pivot table without having any data there. Because it won't overwrite if you import something, will it?
What about putting data in there and taking it out?
That's what I was saying. Will it overwrite the stuff that's already in a table? Or will it keep
no.
it? See, now that you
it'll
can put in...
Money.
If you put in a Jane Doe, you know, as your placeholder...
When we get ready to give this to them finally,
then we can do
all
pivot
that stuff
tables.
We already just used in.
Then we can do pivot tables.
There
Our
you go.
Our table would just be nothing because it would be blank records. It wouldn't have any data to put in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna be yeah.
Isn't this fun?
I want to learn more about PowerSchool anyway, really.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is great. You've done a great job. You even worked until after 9 o'clock. This means you're involved. That's what learning's all about. Well, I'll tell you what. So next week you'll come in and you'll have a whole bunch of good ideas and plans as to how you're going to put this together. And I'm going to request that we'll. Two things are going to happen. Number one is I'm going to request that Sandra and Kathy Skype with us. And number two is I'm going to bring the amazing Mr. Marchesani in here, and we're going to see what we can do about feedback. See if we can find out a way. So poor Callie doesn't sit over there going, ah!
That'd be excellent.
That's what happens when you sit right under the speaker.
That'd be excellent.
That'd be excellent. We'll see what we can do with these sorts of things, okay?
So we're extending age to when?
Pardon?
We're extending age till when?
Next week.
Age till next week.
Till next week. Okay, I forgot.
Is that okay with you? I mean, if you want to give it to me now, you can.
No, I forgot to turn off the answers.
Okay.
I didn't even know it was due.
Well, you got to read that. You got to read it. It's right there.
Well, see, I asked you.
Yes. Huh?
Yes. You said nothing.
Yeah, but you asked me 2 hours before class.
Whatever.
You're supposed to work on this long before that.
Whatever. Yeah,
okay, hang on. We're gonna put a stop to this. Thank you very much. I hope you've all enjoyed this class.